in the midst of a busy city, in the midst of the hustling and bustling of the crowd, in the midst of a demanding life, they found their engagement upon the roof.
Welcome to Anchored in Jesus, the teaching ministry of Dr. William R. Glaze, founder of the Pittsburgh Layman's Bible Institute, author, and senior pastor of Bethany Baptist Church. We thank you for joining us today for the conclusion of En Gedi, an oasis in the wilderness. So let's join Dr. Glaze for the conclusion of En Gedi, an oasis in the wilderness.
In the Bible. And if you look at the slide, we see that En Gedi is in the desert. I mean, it's in the middle of the desert, and in the middle of the desert, this is what you see. A waterfall with palm trees and lush vegetation all around it. And so many people have called En Gedi an oasis in the desert. It, when you look at En Gedi on a map, you can see the Dead Sea. And as you look at the Dead Sea, about halfway down is En Gedi. Then we traveled on, and we did have the opportunity, and I showed you a couple of weeks that we were able to go to Masada. And Masada, again, we went to Masada on a day when it was 101 degrees, and it was hot. It was very hot. And so you can see where En Gedi is located, on the western side of the Dead Sea. Now, I did take a picture. And I'm not sure, you probably can't. Now, this is right before you get to En Gedi, on the way to En Gedi. And I know you can't see it because it was a bad picture that I took. I took it on my phone, and I tried to blow it up. But actually, and you can't see them on here, but there's two animals that are there underneath the shade, and these animals are called ibex. And so when the Bible talks about the kid or the goat, the Hebrew term that's used a lot of time is the ibex. So when we were at the place that led up to En Gedi, that there were these ibex, and there was a whole family of ibex. So that's one of the pictures. I'll share with you a couple more pictures as we go through the sermon today. So it was very interesting, the fact that En Gedi is called the place of the goat or the kid, and that while we were there, we saw these ibex that look, almost like a goat. You know, they have horns and similar to a goat, and similar in stature also. Now, when we think about life, life can be a desert, right? I mean, just think about, if you had the opportunity, or when you get the opportunity to go to Israel, and you drive down along the Dead Sea, nothing but desert. Nothing but desert. And when we think about life, life sometimes can be a desert. In your notes, it says, by nature, deserts are dry, barren, and windy. Life can be like a desert sometimes. On one occasion, as David was going through a difficult time, he cried out that my moisture is turned into the drought of summer. That the vitality of my life, that the juices that flow and keep me connected, the juices that run throughout my spirit and keep me excited, that sometimes my moisture is turned to the drought of summer. David is letting us know that the trial he was facing had become a desert experience. There are times when life can be dry, particularly when we are dealing with death or illness. At other times, life can become barren and fruitless. This is especially true when we go through periods of discouragement, disappointments, and devastation. It is during these times that the winds of opposition in life's desert can be fierce. They come against us from every direction: Satan, temptations, enemies, and even loved ones. When you are in the desert, the sight of water is a beautiful thing. After running from Saul in the dry and barren wilderness, David comes to the oasis of En Gedi. How refreshing that must have been. We We must discover the Engedis of life in order to escape the dryness of our desert encounters. I don't know where you find yourself this morning, but maybe you find yourself in that desert place, and you're like David. You say that my excitement about life, my zeal about life, that there's been a disappointment, a discouragement, a depression that has come into my life that has zapped the moisture, and I just feel dry. Praise God that there are Engedis in life. Places that are oases in the middle of the desert. What is an Engedi? Engedi is a sanctuary. Engedi is a quiet place. Engedi is a peaceful place. But most of all, Engedi is the place where you commune with God, that we get along, whether it be, you know, one of the Engedis for me is just being able to go sit on my deck in the back and just commune with God. Such a powerful time where you leave all the frustrations and disappointments and heartaches of the world, and you just come to that peaceful place where you can be alone with God, you and Him. Let me ask you a question this morning, saints. Where's your Engedi? Where's your Engedi? Where's that sanctuary where you find peace? Where's that sanctuary that you resort to that's a quiet place? Where's that sanctuary that you go to commune with God? Let me share with you three people who found their Engedis, and they all found them in different places. The first person I want to talk about is Susanna Wesley. Now, you may have never heard of Susanna Wesley, but you have heard of her two sons, most likely, Charles and John Wesley, who were great preachers, who were founders of denominations, who God used in a mighty way. Susanna Wesley had 19 children. And it's said of Susanna Wesley that whenever she needed a sanctuary, whenever she needed an Engedi, that she would sit there and she would pull her apron over her head. And that at that time, everybody knew that she was Engedi. Now, we have to admit that she wasn't dealing with Bebe's kids, right? No, I'm just kidding. Right? Right? Because if that was the case, they'd have been snatching the apron off. So, you know, I'm not sure. Evidently, they knew that when the apron was over her head, that she was in her Engedi. And so she found her Engedi right in the midst of the children that she was raising. Let me share with you another guy. This gentleman's name was Brother Lawrence. And Brother Lawrence worked in the monastery. And he was a cook in the kitchen. And he served in the kitchen all the time of his life. And Brother Lawrence had a powerful testimony. As a matter of fact, his communion with God was so deep and powerful that people came to talk to him because they knew that he had tapped into his Engedi. They knew he had tapped into that sanctuary where he could be alone with God. And this is what Brother Lawrence said. The time of business does not differ with me from the time of prayer. Now, if you see there, you see him, he was washing dishes right there. And so he says, the time of business does not with me differ from the time of prayer. And in the noise and clatter of my kitchen, while several persons at the same time calling for different things, look at this. He found his Engedi. This brother found how to tap into his Engedi, his oasis in the desert. He said, I possess God in as great tranquility as if I were upon my knees at the Blessed Sacrament. He says that when I'm standing there washing dishes and people are clamoring all around me and they're demanding things, he said that I've learned how to possess the sanctuary. I've learned how to possess that intimate relationship with God as if I was on my knees at the communion table. He found his Engedi. Have you found your Engedi? Have you found that place that you can go in the dryness, the desert times of life? Then let me share with you a couple of brothers that found Engedi. The Drifters. They found Engedi. The Drifters found Engedi. Now, this was a song that was written by Carole King, but they sang it back in 1963. Listen, or look at some of the words of this song. When this old world starts getting me down, and people are just too much for me to face, I climb way up to the top of the stairs, and all my cares just drift right into space. On the roof, it's peaceful as can be, and there the world below can't bother me. These brothers found their Engedi, right? But they didn't stop there. They didn't stop there. When I come home feeling tired and beat, I go up where the air is fresh and sweet. I get away from the hustling crowd and all that rat race noise down in the street. On the roof, the only place I know where you just have to wish to make it snow. They found their Engedi. In the midst of a busy city, in the midst of the hustling and bustling of the crowd, in the midst of a demanding life, they found their Engedi upon the roof. Susanna Wesley under her apron, Brother Lawrence washing dishes, the Drifters upon the roof. Engedi is something that awaits all of us. That quiet place, that sanctuary in the midst of the desert. We see a couple of things about Engedi. The first thing we see is that Engedi is a place of refuge. Engedi is a place of refuge. In 1 Samuel chapter 23 and verse 29, it says, and David went up from thence and dwelt in the strongholds at Engedi. Now, I was actually able to see these from the road as we went to Masada. These are the caves of Engedi right here. So I was able to take a picture of the caves of Engedi, where David, when he was running from Saul, he ran to Engedi, and he was able to hide out in one of the caves up there. And you remember the Bible says that Saul went into the cave, one of the caves, to relieve himself. You know, in other words, to go to the bathroom. And while he was relieving himself, and when I get to heaven, I'm going to ask David how he did this. But he actually went up behind Saul and cut off a piece of his garment and was able to show Saul that he got, look, I got that close to you, and I could have killed you, right? But where did he do that at? He did it in the caves of Engedi. And so Engedi for David was a stronghold. Engedi for David is a place of refuge. And that when you find that desert, that oasis in the midst of the desert, that means that you have found that place where you can get away, where you can feel safe, and where you can feel protected. Have you ever had one of those days when you just felt that you were under attack? And maybe you said to yourself, if I could just go home. You know, if I could, and really, what were you saying? If I could just go to that place where I feel safe and secure. That everybody needs an En Gedi. Everybody needs a place of refuge. That place that when you go to, whether it's your home or wherever, it's a park or wherever it might be, that place where you can go and you can get along with God and you can feel safe from the attacks of the world. One young lady said to a young man, "You know, I just feel safe with you. I just feel safe with you." You're opposed to a lady that's being abused and that's being berated. And you can imagine how she must feel when she comes into the presence of the person that says that they love her. And the tension that's there. And the anguish that's there. And the unrest that's there. But then that one lady finds that man where she says, "I feel safe with you." What is she saying? "You're my En Gedi. You're that place where I go and I feel safe. I feel like whatever else is going on in the world, that I can come here and I don't have to worry about being attacked." That this is a place of En Gedi. En Gedi is a refuge where you can go and get away from the attacks of the world, from coworkers who attack you, from neighbors who attack you, from relatives who attack you, from people in the world who attack you. That when you can find that place in the presence of God, like I said, whether it's under an apron, whether it's at the kitchen, whether it's on the roof, it's just a place that you come into the presence of God and you feel safe. En Gedi is a place of refuge. And not only is En Gedi a place of refuge, but I like this. En Gedi is a place of refocusing. En Gedi is a place of refocusing. This is a powerful passage, and I wish I had time to get into it, but we're not going to get into it. Let me just highlight the passage. Psalm 73. Psalm 73. And in Psalm 73, the psalmist begins by saying, "Truly God is good to Israel, even as to such are of a clean heart. But as for me, my feet were almost gone. My steps had almost slipped." And he said, he goes on to this discourse where he was watching the wicked and he was seeing how they prosper. And he was saying how that it shook his faith. At the very core, that I'm trying to live for God. I'm trying to serve God. And I see wicked folk out here doing evil things, and it seemed like they're prospering. And this thing shook me at my very faith. But he says, in verse 17, "Until I went into En Gedi." Right? "Until I went into En Gedi." Until I went into the sanctuary. Go back to that picture of the sanctuary where I talked about the sanctuary, the peace, the communion with God. He said, "Until I went into my sanctuary," that quiet place, that peaceful place, but most of all, that place where I communed with God. "Until I went into my En Gedi." Until I got quiet. As long as I was out in the hustle and bustle and focusing on the wicked and the evil of the world, he said, "Man, my feet almost slipped. I almost lost my way." Maybe you almost slipped. Maybe you're slipping right now. Maybe you're losing your way. And you need to focus on En Gedi. I'd share an illustration in one of the sermons that I preach. In the illustration, is one year when I was living in Virginia, I decided to get a shed. And it was a metal shed. And it had about 9 million screws, right? So you put this shed. I was out there for 2 days in the hot sun putting this metal shed together, screwing these screws in. And I got to the end, and all the pieces were out of the box. And I looked at the end of the shed at one end, and there was a gap of about 2 feet on each side. And I thought to myself, I said, man, they didn't give me all the parts to this shed. And so I was upset. And I went in and I found my instructions, and I looked for the 800 number, got the 800 number, called the 800 number, and told them, look, man, I said, I've been out in the sun 2 days laboring. I put this shed together, and I'm missing some parts. And the lady said, well, that's very unusual, sir. You know, we usually don't get calls like this. And I said, well, I don't know why it happened to me, but I need to get these parts. She said, well, the only thing I can recommend that you do is take the shed back down and bring it back to the store, and we'll give you another one. I said, are you crazy? I didn't say this to her. I didn't say it to her, but I said, you must be crazy. 2 days in the sun, screwing these screws in. And so I went to Engedi. I went to that quiet place. I went to that place where I sat down and I began to study the instructions. And I began to look at the shed. And as I went back and read the instructions, I found that the foundation for the shed was for an 8-foot or 6-foot shed. And I had laid the foundation for an 8-foot shed. And when I studied it, when I looked at the problem and saw that all I had to do was loosen the screws on one end and the foundation slid and the shed was perfect. See, I had to get quiet. I had to go to that quiet place. I could have kept out there or screwing, and I could have kept out there banging and all this other stuff, right? But I got quiet, and I went to God. And so Engedi, if you go back to that slide, Engedi is a place of refocusing. It's a place of refocusing. That when you get along with God, when you go to your sanctuary, that you can refocus on your life. You can refocus on what you're supposed to do. You can refocus and get new perspective on the things that are going on in your life. Engedi is a place of refocusing. Engedi is also a place of refreshment. Engedi is a place of refreshment. The psalmist said, oh God, thou art my God. Early will I seek thee. My soul thirsteth for thee. My flesh longeth for thee in a dry and thirsty land where no water is. Engedi is a place of refreshment. In your notes, some commentators believe that David wrote Psalm 63 when he was hiding from Saul in Engedi. In verse 1, he said, oh God, thou art my God. Early will I seek thee. My soul thirsteth for thee. My flesh longeth for thee in a dry and thirsty land where no water is. David compared his desire for God to that of a man thirsting for water. Just think of how refreshing it is when the cool water touches his parched lips. Our souls become weary in the desert land. And when we can get to our spiritual Engedi, how refreshing it is to read a verse, whisper a prayer, or listen to a song that ministers to our dehydrated souls. The invigorating waters of Engedi is that quiet place where we go when we come out of the desert to hear God's voice and seek his face, that dry place. I've been, along with another guy, working on a wall at my house. And yesterday we were out there all day working on this wall.
Thank you for joining us today on Anchored in Jesus. Tune in next time for the first half of Close Encounters with God. If you would like to request an audio copy or the notes of today's message, Engedi, an oasis in the wilderness, you can contact us at anchoredinjesus.org and request Engedi, an oasis in the wilderness. That's anchoredinjesus.org and request Engedi, an oasis in the wilderness. Or call us at 877-831-5060. When you visit our website, anchoredinjesus.org, you can view many of the other teachings by Dr. Glaze. Dr. Glaze is the author of 7 books. For more information about these resources and how to order, visit anchoredinjesus.org or call 877-831-5060. We also invite you to like us on Facebook at Anchored in Jesus Ministries. If you would like to make a financial contribution, please visit our website, anchoredinjesus.org, or send it to Anchored in Jesus at P.O. Box 24034, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 15206. Once again, that website is anchoredinjesus.org, or you can send your financial contribution to Anchored in Jesus at P.O. Box 24034, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 15206. It's through your prayers and gifts that we remain on the air. Our title, Anchored in Jesus, comes from Hebrews chapter 6, verse 19, which lets us know that Jesus is our high priest and an anchor for the soul. As we conclude today's broadcast, let me remind you, you don't have to be tossed in the storms of life. Your soul can be anchored in the Lord.